This is the Alembic Files, begun at daybreak, September 2nd, 2018. The Alembic Files, in its first manifestation, appeared in about 2013 to 2014 and was dedicated to pointing out the mythology that America's history pretty much is. He said from time to time, in years gone by, that the problem with Americans is that they've been propagandized into believing they can't be propagandized. That's what other countries do. Other corporate nations. But it's just as evident here. And to try to support that claim, myself and two others, Gordon Comstock and Eric the Blacksmith, brought forth works from the 18th century, 19th century. By the way, any of you who remember whatever I did in the last decade or more, I always had birds in the background. They were budgies that my wife and I raised, but that era is gone. Instead, I have put bird feeders outside the window. And that right there is a blue jay who's looking for his parents. And you'll hear the squabbling going on between the chipping sparrows and the English sparrows and the purple finches and the house finches. And, of course, every one of those species thinks they're better than the other species. what's on Radio for All right now, and it's the only place where it appears, is a redo of what we did in 2013, 2014, which still stands to this very day. Why I pulled everything down is one thing, but it's going up selectively. And it's for those people who have ears to hear, but you're not going to like it because it's not good news. And we all need good news. We all need happy endings. We all need Hollywood productions. But, unfortunately, the world doesn't care about that. And just consider if you were growing up, say, 5, 6, 7, whatever, in Poland in 1936, when the Nazis came goose-stepping in, that probably was a sign that things aren't going to work out too well for the near future. People are born in the epochs they're born in, and sometimes the news just ain't good. Now, there's things you can do about it, but don't ever think in this day and age that you're going to overthrow governments. It's not going to happen. And one of the most ridiculous things that so-called patriots, and I call them patriot idiots, believe of in America is that they keep thinking that we're back in, like, 1775 and that we're going to just duke it out with the powers that be, and we win, and we raise the flag, and the music comes in, and the credits roll at the end of the Hollywood production. Those days are gone. Not going to happen. Once they invented gunpowder, the gap between government and peoples as far as being able to bring war to one another radically changed. It's up to everybody to decide whether or not what we bring forth, even though it's factual, is something they can understand and deal with personally, because what's coming is not going to be good. Government is a corporation that has three priorities. One, its existence. Two, its existence. And three, its existence. It will act altruistically at times, but like a abusive parent, even though it will provide succor for some, it'll slap the crap out of you the next day. In 1941, a West Coast poet by the name of Robinson Jeffers wrote a poem entitled "Be Angry at the Sun." I first encountered it as an epigraph of sorts to another chapter in the book written by Hunter S. Thompson entitled Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. what's interesting now as I look back is when I first read that, it was 34 years after it was written. Again, written in 1941. I read it in 1975. And from this very moment, back to the first time I read it in 1975, 43 years have passed, 43. Two more than the span of time between my first reading of the poem and when it was published. And I can say this, from the first time I read it to this very day, it makes more and more sense with every year that passes by, and I'm sorry, that ain't good. But if you want to know the story of civilization, you couldn't get a better, more succinct portrait of it in 141 words. So here we go. That public men publish falsehoods is nothing new. That America must accept, like the historical republics, corruption and empire, has been known for years. Be angry at the sun for setting, if these things anger you. Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel, these people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. You are not Catullus, you know, to lampoon these crude sketches of Caesar. You are far from Dante's feet, but even farther from his dirty political hatreds. Let boys want pleasure, and men struggle for power, and women perhaps for fame, and the servile to serve a leader, and the dupes to be duped. Yours is not theirs. Unfortunately, theirs is yours for too many of you who want to believe in the way things should be, who want to believe in people who cannot bring them any alleviation from suffering, any better state as far as government goes. I look at a lot of the shows on Radio for All and on TV and read commentaries in newspapers and magazines, and it's all a bunch of crap. And I really get a kick out of these analysts who appear on, like, Face the Nation and all this other crap, Fox this and all the nations, all the stations, rather, that are bringing you the truth, and how they break down and analyze and strategize or whatever. And it's about nothing. It's all a show. We have no government. It's just important that government give the appearance of it being a government. This show and all the shows in all of the world are run for one purpose, and that is to make money. For them, on you. That's the name of the game. There's a quote by, what is it, George Santayana? Let me see where I am. Here it is. And everybody's familiar with it in some iteration or another. But what Santayana actually said was, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Well, that's not entirely true. Because the history that's presented to people, because it's history, has come from the past. And from the time it occurred, and Santayana had a quote that also addressed history, that it was written by people who weren't there about events that never happened. But history, and ours especially, and that's where the Olympic Files directed its attention, was the fact that the history's been sanitized. And beyond being sanitized, the information that's there, a whole lot was left out. Now, do I love America? Not necessarily. Do I hate it? No. I mean, when somebody says they love their country, what do they mean? The government? The military? The laws? The landscape? Or do they love something that they have an idea of that never has come to fruition and never will? I pay my taxes. I behave. I follow the laws required to be followed for an orderly running of a society. And I'm an employee of this corporation. I'm all right with that. It's the way it's got to be. This is a sin-cursed earth. It's corrupted. And that's the way it is everywhere. What's the big deal? That's the nature of government. And I don't consider it anything else. What you see right now from all our officials in D.C. is nothing but a dog and pony show. And the antipathy between Democrat and Republican supporters is so entrenched, is so ridden with hatred, that neither party realizes that we're all going down the tubes. Because government really doesn't address the big problems and make sure that it's in gridlock. So they really can't get anything done except what is supposed to be done. And that doesn't come down from politicians. It comes down from the people who run this world. And if you're saying it's the Illuminati, that means you don't know who it is. The Illuminati is a catchphrase I used when I was trying to figure out who ran the show. But addressing Santayana's quote, the reason why history repeats itself is because human behavior doesn't change. There may be more technology. I guess you can argue that there may be more sophistication. But human behavior doesn't change. It reacts the same way to the same stimuli no matter what epoch you're in. And that's why history repeats itself. Because people right now, I think, pretty much know that we're headed for at least one cataclysm. There's going to be a financial crash because you must have them before you have the next world war. And we are headed for both. And what people don't want to countenance whatsoever, and I'm not happy about it, but the script calls for the United States to get cut down the next time around.
Long after your country has been destroyed.
What are you talking about? America is not going to be destroyed.
Never.
Well?
Rome was destroyed. Greece was destroyed. Persia was destroyed. Spain was destroyed. All great countries are destroyed. Why not yours? How much longer do you think your country will last? Forever?
Well, forever is a long time, I guess.
Very long.
And that's on our way to world government, which will sound very nice, but it's like selling a poison apple. Looks good and shiny on the outside, but once you take a bite of it, you're doomed. And that's what we're headed for. So we are going to repeat history, because that's all we can do. And that's got a lot to do with the whole nature of the, I guess, what are we going to call this? The political nature of countries that they think it's so great they have democracies. Democracy is a bad word. It is mob rule without a doubt. And what I have to laugh about in the United States is that we all claim we have a democracy and we're all happy about that, but we do not directly vote for president. How can that be? How come the popular vote doesn't mean anything? Well, they have electors, and that was for a reason, 200 some odd years ago. And it's also so they can rig, for the most part, the results. I mean, it was a laugh in this country. The manipulation to get voters to vote for the person who was already pre-selected to be president worked quite well and has been going on for quite some time. I mean, one of the biggest screw-ups was in 1876 with the Hayes-Tilden election, and that for another time. But it got weird in the, 92 election, when you had Bush, Daddy Bush, running against Clinton with Perot. And Perot was drawing away from Bush. And at some point, I guess they thought they didn't need him anymore, and he stepped down, which is the only time I've ever seen a candidate who had quite some backing pull out of a race. And then when Bush's numbers went back up, they brought Perot back in, and the election was won by Clinton. And then in 2000 and 2004, major screw-ups, and that'll never happen again. And that's why, you know, I have to laugh. Electronic voting, who cares? I mean, you can vote. You know, and I hear this stuff about how soldiers have died for preserving our right to vote, and it's like, well, I hope that's not the case. Because your vote really doesn't mean a thing. They would rather have the pre-selected person actually voted in with votes that don't count, yours. But they always have the ability to make sure they can swing it so that the right person, quote, right person, gets in. Now, for an example of the enmity between Republicans and Democrats, here we are almost ready for the next presidential election. And the scandals that are going, they're still bashing Hillary for the email thing, whatever that was, for Trump and the communists, the Russians. I mean, there hasn't been a presidency that hasn't had a scandal I mean, going back to, you know, arguably for time immemorial, but I mean, you take a look at one of the most ridiculous ones, and that was Clinton and the Whitewater situation. How many years of investigation had come up with nothing? But in the meantime, everybody was paying attention to Whitewater, rather. And there's another scandal, Watergate, back in 70, was it, 2, 4, 6, 8, I don't know. And that was just a contrivance to get Nixon to step down, the only president to leave office, supposedly by his own volition. Wasn't worth assassinating, so they just spanked him, told him to leave D.C. without dinner. But everybody's all up in arms about what Hillary did and what Trump supposedly did. Oh, and going back to the Whitewater situation, what was even funnier was that the legal entity that was doing the investigation was Ken Starr, who was a member, as Clinton was, of the Council on Foreign Relations. All brothers under the skin, just playing the role, just putting on theater for people. And so the reason why we have these scandals is that, again, it allows each party to hate the other party even more by holding up these scandals. And it's gotten to the point where people don't vote for their candidate. They just try to vote so your candidate doesn't get in. They don't care if theirs gets in. They just don't want yours to get in. And that's where we're at now. I mean, it's so pathetic that the other day I shook my head when I was hearing people going back and forth about the left and the right-leaning search engines. I'm like, what? Yeah, I understand how search engines work, right? We got all that stuff. But that's how petty it's become. Well, I don't use Google because it's left-leaning. I mean, this is the stuff. I mean, it makes fourth graders look mature. So these Democrat and Republican voters are at each other's throats. It gets worse each year. It really is embarrassing. But it's because then they are not looking at the big picture, and that is no matter what party holds sway in D.C., you're still getting screwed. At some point, we'll play a 7-minute clip from George Carlin from years ago about the true nature of government. And the only regrettable thing about it was that he gave this as part of his act, his comedy act. I guess it was before probably Democratic voters who were just yay-hooing everything he said. What they didn't realize is that he was talking about government, about, yes, you Democrats and you Republicans, but that's how people are. I don't vote anymore. I don't care what they do, because no matter who gets in, it's bad. You know, you can't place the lesser of two evils. They're all evil, so it doesn't make a difference. What's going to be done is done. I mean, honestly, if you think about it, corporation, when you were going to change CEOs every 4 years, I mean, you'd be going all over the place, you know, like a yo-yo, going this way. Oh, no, the other guy had said we're going to go the other way, and then she got in and we went this way. I mean, it makes no sense. So there's a script that's out there that is to be played out, and what is to be done during a certain administration gets done. So whether it was Obama or Sunbush, or it doesn't make a difference. They all suck. You know, live with it. But what it says here, and also in Be Angry at the Sun, is just, I mean, when I was younger and I read it in 75, you know, you have this feeling that if something's bad, something that's going on in your country is bad, that it'll go away and everything will be good. But if it goes away, something else replaces that's bad. I mean, right now, I mean, ridiculous. We're being told that our economy is so strong and the dollar is strong, and I'm sure it is. But I have to laugh because Wall Street's making it hand over fist, and we've seen this before. In the meantime, you got how many millions of people out of work? And all administrations play games with the employment figures. They all have. But even now, I mean, what is not said is how many of the millions of jobs that are created, like 500,000 maybe in a year, once in a while, and everybody gets all wet about it. Imagine that. A country of 300 plus million people, they create 5,000 jobs, 50,000 jobs, 500,000 jobs, and everybody's going, yay. And probably every one of those jobs now is part-time, which means you don't get any benefits. A pension, you want what? I mean, how does that happen? And now supposedly 40% of American households can't meet the basic needs, like food, housing, medical. So how can you have both going on at the same time? So they'll get everybody to go ahead. I mean, they're pumping the Wall Street, and everybody will go in and get into Wall Street. And I don't know about Bitcoin at all. I don't care. But they'll pump it, and then one day we'll all wake up and find out, guess what? You've had a crash. And remember that we're what? We're overdue since 2008. Every 7 years from 1987, we've had what politely is called a contraction. I got another word for it. We had one in 87. We had one in 2001. No. We had one in 87. We had one in 94. Had one in 2001. And then another, I mean, you can argue what date it is. We just say 2007. So we're overdue for that contraction we should have had probably back in 14 or 15. And then you have the 29 and 30-year cycles where at one time you had the Wall Street crash of 29. Then you had the pretty large recession of 58, 59. And then we had Black Monday of 87. So we were going to go about 30 years. We should have had one last year, and we didn't. But we're due. And I shudder to think that the reason why these are delayed, that they're longer in coming, is because this is going to be the all-time, all-timer, folks. But looking back at the poem, what hits me now more than anything else is this line. Because this says it all. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. When you listen to or watch mainstream news, and even the stuff that's on the internet is just horrible about this. First of all, you have to realize that those shows are there to make money, either for the company, the individual, whatever. And when you want people to listen, you want the most amount of people you can possibly get to do that. Now, when you listen to or watch shows that are obviously Republican or Democrat, you know things like whatever's on MSNBC, I guess that's supposed to be left. CNN, Fox is right, blah, blah, blah. I have no idea. I don't care anymore. I don't listen to that stuff. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of your time, too. Well, they get paid to pitch something from a certain angle. So they're not going to rely on trying to get people to listen from both sides of the aisle. They'll just play to their constituency. I mean, Rush Limbaugh doesn't get paid the money he gets paid to tell you the truth. He's just going to sit there and bang on Democrats all day long. For others who are trying to make money, they don't want to give anyone any bad news. They don't want to be controversial to a certain extent. They just want to please everybody, so you just keep the good stuff flowing. But that's not life, and that's not reality. But it's arguable that, you know, people listen to this stuff for entertainment, and that could possibly be true. I did a Monday through Friday one-hour daily show, and it turned into something like entertainment. Brought in stuff from everywhere, and it sickened me, because I had gone so far afield from where I thought I was going because of what I wanted to find out, and the people that I drew were nauseating. You realize how many sick puppies are out there when you get emails. So if you give it to them straight and it doesn't have a happy ending, they don't want to listen. And in a way, I can understand that. But what I don't understand is why you would go to somebody who's giving you nothing but honey-covered bullcrap and you'll listen to that. You know, just fool me one more time. You can fake just for old time's sake. And so I never, ever could have gone to a network, the Patriot Networks, because the rest of the hosts would have gone nuts on me. And I had a relationship with GCN for a while, did some guesting, was a guest. But what I'm telling people, I mean, if you take a look at some of these networks, I don't know how many there are now, these tin can networks, and you look at the little bios for the hosts, well, so-and-so tells the truth, tells it really the way it is. He tells the truth, and this one tells the truth. And they don't tell the truth. I mean, people are still yakking. In fact, look at it this way. The Patriots are believing in the same fairy tale that mainstream supporters are. In other words, everybody wants to yak about, let's get our Constitution back. Okay? When was it ever yours? You don't realize the true nature of the Constitution and why it was drafted by the elites who were not elected to go down there. Oh, they were sent by those that were elected. I don't care. They go down and they knock out the Constitution, which is a knockoff of the British Constitution. They didn't come up with that by themselves from scratch in 3 days. And they did it in secret, not because they were afraid of what, the British? That was over with, remember? They were afraid because they were screwing the people right from the start. If you were to try, and many have, and if you listen to Patriot Radio, you'll hear time and time again callers. I have been listening since 03. I mean, I stop in once in a while. Actually, I haven't done even that since, I don't know, 2013. But you always hear at least one person call in and say, well, you know, so-and-so went to federal court and wanted to use the Constitution as a defense, and they were warned by the judge. And they were told that if they tried to do that, they would be cited for contempt. I don't get it. Well, you don't get it because here's the point. Private citizens are not parties to the compact, the contract that is the Constitution. That wasn't drafted for you and me. And that's part of the problem. So you want something back that you never had. It just seems like at one point in our history we had it. And that's the Patriots, and it's also the same mainstream people. Well, we have to get back to the Constitution. Okay. When did you lose it? So that's just another vapid soundbite that means nothing. But everybody acts it. And we have to get good government back. Well, how are we going to do that? We're going to vote it in. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not. I mean, it's arguable that as you go down the food chain from the federal government to the state governments to the local governments, you might get a little bit more representation on the bottom end. But forget it when you go with the feds and even with the state. I mean, right now in this particular state, and I'm sure in many of them across the country, there are primaries getting ready for November, right? And you know they don't do anything. None of them have. Because they promise the same stuff every single election year. You know, I hear stuff about, well, we have so-and-so values, like whatever state you're in, like, you know, I believe in Vermont values, or I believe in Georgia values, or I believe in Texas values. What does that mean? What is that? I don't know. What does that mean? And what's that got to do with anything? They just say the same stuff. They make sure they get all the buzzwords in there. Core values. Everything's core now. Core values. But the damn roads don't get fixed. The school systems suck. And we do this all the time. You can't stay within a budget. Everything's going to frickin' frack. And every year or every quadrennial, whatever it should be, every summer before the November elections, you hear the same stuff. And the reason why it's the same stuff is because nobody does anything when they get into office. Everything is so corrupt that everybody just goes ahead and deals with the status quo. They make the contacts they need to make for themselves, and they line their own pockets. I mean, our senators and representatives at D.C. are a joke. You think you can find an honest person there? I don't think so. And if somebody gets elected that is honest, they only last a term or so, because if they can't stomach what goes on, they don't run for re-election, or they try to make a difference and they just get ostracized by everyone else because it's like, kid, you don't understand. This is how it goes. So get on the gravy train or get lost. So we have no government. Corporations do what they want. We have no protection. That's just the way it is. And no one's going to change it. It is an absolute rank cesspool into which no one can go and stay clean. Impossible. That's how it goes. And it's become worse in this country with every decade that's gone by. I mean, the robber baron families bought out government in the early part of the 20th century. John Dee got things rolling. They got the Council on Foreign Relations started. And they bought votes. They bought politicians who are whores. And calling them whores gives whores, real whores, a bad name. Because at least they give you what you pay for. The government just takes it and takes it and takes it. Now, the whole bit about the democracy, about how the gang serves lies. The reason why you don't want a democracy, and Plato ranked it third of the four worst forms of government, the last being anarchy. You can read that in The Republic. Now, Plato was a statist who just wanted the brightest to rule in a sort of oligarchy. I don't know. Maybe that would have been better. I have no idea. But the instrument of government now is so far gone, it's not coming back. It has turned against us, and once in a while it'll do something nice just to keep the savages happy. And that's about it. I don't want to single them out, but I'm going to. I mean, McCain just passed away. And all this glowing rhetoric about him and the platitudes and, oh, yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and check out some documentaries in which heads of veteran associations talked about just how much McCain couldn't care about the veterans. He and John Kerry, another warrior who got shot in the ass. How'd you do that, John? Running away? If you go on the internet and you Google missing, presumed dead, it's a story about a man by the name of Dumas, who was one of four brothers who were in Korea. And I guess the youngest of the Dumas brothers, I don't even know if he's still alive, was always trying to find out what happened to the other brother. Maybe that was the youngest one. But my point is, the one brother did not stop in over five decades to try to get some help from the government to go over and just check to see whether or not the brother had passed or if he had lived for some time in a camp, whatever. And couldn't get any help. In fact, there's one scene where this little man, you know, in his 70s, is sitting in on the hill in front of some Senate subcommittee, and McCain and Kerry are sitting there, and he's asking him, senators, could you? And they get up laughing, and they walk together, hand in hand, and turn their backs on Dumas. Go check that out. I think it was his nephew on, the son of another of the brothers, there are four of them, like I said, that went to Korea. And I had him on twice in years gone by. And that's John McCain for you. It's all crap. The whole thing is crap. Everything you see out there is garbage. It's all beauty stories and the best of this, that, and the other thing, and it has nothing to do with the truth. But anyway, getting back to the democracy, you don't want a democracy because it's mob rule, but it gets better than that. Just consider this. And especially with electronic mass media, this is much easier to do. But if you can sway public opinion, which is not that hard, if you can get the herd running all in one direction, then you can make them do whatever you want. So the reason why the government would like a democracy is because they know it means, as Ibsen said once upon a time, that the majority is never right. I used to think that was an overstatement. It's not. You see what the majority wants, and chances are, 9 times out of 10 or even more, it is exactly what you don't want. And part of the reason is because most people don't want to twist in the breeze. They don't want to stand out alone. They got to go with the pack because they need the protection. They want to go with what's popular. And there you have it. So you, all you have to do is get the masses running in the same direction, and you own them. And there's nothing that any small group can do or individual can do to make any kind of dent in that. So democracy is not a good thing. And they call us a constitutional republic, but the Constitution wasn't for us. And republic, I don't know, what does that mean? A representative form of government? Well, I don't want them to represent me. I had a couple of email exchanges from people who somewhere, somehow found something I did and want to get in touch with me. And everything was fine for a while. And then they wanted to know what was the solution. There's no solutions. Yeah, I know you want a happy ending. I know you want to know that everything works out okay. Guess what? Sometimes it doesn't. And wishful thinking is worth nothing. I mean, I hear a million times, well, I believe in mankind, humankind. I believe in the goodness of humankind. Really? How's humankind worked things out lately? Everybody's waiting for that, what is it, some epoch or generation that's going to come in and suddenly be what everybody wants it to be and it's going to change everything? No, it's human behavior. They're going to do the same thing. Hello? I mean, you know the definition of insanity. Well, what do you think this is? Well, you can't give up. I'm not giving up. I'm just telling you that what you want to do can't be done. And I've had others years ago that said, well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And, you know, I'm going to make a difference. And I mean, I said, okay, look, truthfully, I want you to do it. Do it. And when you get it going and it's working, just do me a favor, really, and get back in touch with me. Not once did I ever hear from those people again. Because you can't do it. That period's over with, and we are in trouble. Because as we go to world government, which is going to look nice and neat and say warm, fuzzy things, and then when they have you trapped, it's over with. I mean, what we've been promised is a new feudalism, and we're going to get it. So, again, the gang serves lies. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. That is the way it is. Now, you can read up on Robinson Jeffers if you want. He's really probably a very forgotten, if ever remembered, poet. One of the West Coast poets like Corso and Rex Roth and Ferlinghetti. And I am assuming that the conflict between Japan and the United States hit him rather hard. And that begat this poem, Be Angry at the Sun. And like I said, that's the story of civilization in 141 words. You know, I talked about a solution, but nobody really wants much to hear about it because it's got to do with the Bible. It's got to do about the truth of Scripture. And I've heard all the arguments. Yeah, I know. Well, the Bible was written by men. Well, it may have been written by men who were basically amanuenses. But I mean, if you read the Bible and you were to take a look around at what's going on and say that it isn't the truth, I have no idea how you can do that. But most people don't want to know about religion, and I don't blame, because I don't like religion either, and I don't call myself a Christian. Christian's like a dirty word now, because I don't understand what's going on, even in the evangelical quarters. I mean, these people do not read the Bible. To me, that's where the power is, you know, and it gives you a solution as far as what happens to your soul after you go on, because your body will die on this earth and it will not go anywhere except moldering into the ground or if you torch it. But your soul lives on forever. It's a question of where it does so. But even Christians who should know better about getting involved in things that Jesus said not to, they're listening to their preachers who also are not supposed to have those jobs forever. Because the Bible in the New Testament lays out a structure for the way it's supposed to be. If you want to hold on to your job, then you got to make sure that you don't get most of the parishioners upset with you. Or you just find the group of parishioners who are the richest and you play to them and you'll never have a problem. But it doesn't do much about the truth. And there's an old story about how, well, the Catholics don't have Bibles in their church, but the Protestants have them and don't read them. And it's true. I mean, I don't understand why Christians are getting involved in secular matters, such as politics and government and supporting candidates. I mean, that evangelicals can turn around and find something to support Trump for. I mean, Trump is playing a role. He must be having a, a blast. Acting like the drunk uncle that nobody really wants to invite to Thanksgiving, but you have to because, well, after all, he's your uncle. I mean, the guy's acting like a complete lout, and he's loving it. I mean, this is, I'm still thinking this is a real-life sitcom that we're finally going to hear. You know, it was only a joke. But, I mean, there's nothing in Trump that I can see where an evangelical would want to support him. But they do. But here's what they forget. And I know a lot of you don't want to believe in a Jesus or a God, a Lord, a Jehovah, if you will. Oh, because it's like supernatural, and that can't possibly be true. I mean, how could Jesus do that? He was just a man. I mean, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, number one. And two, most of these people just love the occult. I mean, there's no shortage of people who want to, like, be alchemists and love the dark side of life. No one should. That's supernatural, but that's okay. But you talk about the Lord, and it's like, leave me alone. But one of, you know, there are two things, one in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament, that I think says it all. And as far as evangelicals thinking that, you see, the whole idea about God and country in the United States and about how, like, the Lord loved this specially because pilgrims and Puritans came over here? Really? All right, great. So what did that mean? They ran away from being persecuted in Europe so they can come over here and within a short period of time persecute others who didn't believe like they did. You know, and this wasn't some great, you know, exile into the promised land because they were paying rent to the crown. So, like, where does this connection between God and country come? Because there is none. The Lord doesn't look at the earth and see countries. He doesn't see nations. He has no hand in that. Not even the creation of Israel, which evangelicals think was done by God. No, it wasn't. It was done by the West, and especially Britain. But what happened was, in getting that, in forging that connection, it then allowed people to be propagandized, either in the pulpit or in the press or wherever, that if we get involved in a scrap, we must be right because God loves us. He loves us more than he loves other countries because, well, we're a Christian country. Oh, really? Is that right? Why? Because people come out twice to go to church, Easter or Ishtar and Christmas, Saturnalia. That's what makes them Christians? Or it's because you have to put something down on the certificate or whatever? Yeah, okay. But in Luke 4:5, I mean, this to me says it all. In Luke 4:5, it's the story of the temptation of Christ by Satan. See, people who like the dark side don't believe in Satan, or at least they won't tell you they do. But that's what's behind both forces, good and evil, Satan on one side, Jehovah on the other, and that's how it goes. So we are not dealing with flesh and blood and trying to win wars that way, but we're dealing with, if you will, spiritually warring against principalities of darkness and corruption in high places. But here's what it says in Luke 4:5. And the devil, taking him, meaning Jesus, up into a high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. Now, I don't know how anybody cannot mistake what's being said there, except that they think that if the word kingdom is used, as it appeared in the King James Version, 1611, that it was only about then. It wasn't about then. Kingdom is the word most applied to what we mean today by countries. When you see nations in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, most time it refers to peoples, races, things like that, ethnicities. But here it says, and the devil taking him up into a high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And that to me, as far as I can, and I'm not reading commentaries to tell me what somebody else thinks, to me that just means you're seeing all that ever were, are, and will be. And it continues, and the devil said unto him, meaning Jesus, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will I give it. All right, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. And Jesus answered and said unto him, get thee behind me, Satan. For it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. So here's the devil saying to Jesus, I'll give you all these kingdoms, because they were given to him. So how can government be good? How can there ever be any good government? There isn't. All the nations of this world, all the kingdoms of this world, all the countries of this world are not led by benign governments and certainly not Christian governments. But But somehow that gets overlooked by the evangelicals. Now this one is good, and this is the second one. I said there was one from the New Testament and one from the Old Testament. And if there should be some moments of comedy in the Bible, I say that not disrespectfully, because you could see this played out in a drama. And there is a bit of levity to it because of what's going on. And this also has to do with the nature of government, and this says it all. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 4, it says, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah, and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." Now this bit about make us a king to judge us like all the nations is like a little kid going, well, the other kids have it, and we want it. And I mean, at this time, Jehovah was both the spiritual and, if you will, the secular head of the tribes. That is a theocracy. That will never happen, has never happened on earth since, and will never happen because governments are bad. This is the day when Jehovah withdrew himself from being, if you will, the secular head of a body. And here we go. So these are the people telling Samuel, you know, tell Jehovah it's been nice, but we want a king like all the other countries have. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee." Now this is where it gets good, because he lays out what the king is going to do, what the nature of a king is, and you can substitute the word king with government. And this is verse 9. "Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." And this is where it gets kind of funny, because Samuel is, you know, sick at heart. That he's had to bring the news to Jehovah, who already knew. He knew. And he appreciates Samuel and his disposition toward this whole thing, because Samuel's a good man. He's obedient to the Lord. And this says it about government from that moment on. And here we go. And this is the Lord. And he said, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground, to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries, and to be cooks, and to be bakers. And he will take your fields, and your vineyards, and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. And he will take the tenth of your seed, and of your vineyards, and give it to his officers and to his servants. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your sheep, and ye shall be his servants. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which ye shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, Nay, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Well, I don't know who told you that, man, but he's not fighting your battles. You're fighting his battles. But do you see what I'm saying here? Here it is. And he will take, and he will take, and he will take, and he will take. You take a look at government now. They can't live within their budget. They keep asking for more money. When some corporations want to secure some land for whatever they're doing. Not so much anymore, because obviously there's less of it. But that's when you're going to go fight. For what? Now let's be truthful about it. Ever since World War II, Americans ask, what were we fighting in Korea for? What were we fighting in Vietnam for? What are we fighting in Grenada for? What are we fighting in Iraq for? What are we fighting for in Afghanistan? Nobody knows. I mean, this is crazy. We've been over in Afghanistan for what? 17 years? That's longer than Vietnam if you want to go from 60 to 74. And truthfully, it goes back to 91 with Iraq. We never left. We pulled out of Iraq and we went, what do you do? Load everything over in Yemen or Qatar or whatever. The materiel stayed. Troops might have been brought back, but they're back out again. So that's the nature of government, and that's just how it is. And it's not going to get better. And so like I said, late summer and fall, when candidates are being elected by their parties, and it's going to be a change. And I'll tell you, you know, if you're a constitutionalist or you belong to whatever, what else is out there? You know, I forget. You know, I love to hear these shows, and it's like, well, how many candidates did you get elected to Senate? None. How about to the House? None. I mean, what don't you get about this? It doesn't matter what your platform is. It doesn't matter what you believe in. You're not getting elected. That's it. And if there's one of you, well, so what? Well, one makes a difference. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I mean, you know, stop with these, like, empty platitudes, these sayings, these cliches. Well, one person can make a difference. You know, where? Yeah, there's two of you, yeah. Or three or four. You know, and the other thing is, too, if you look at the 9/11 truth groups and all that, I mean, what a joke that became. Those groups were already infiltrated, like, by day three. And all they ever do is just fall over each other. That's how it is. It hasn't changed anything. So with the Olympic files, there'll be old works brought up, like Eric the Blacksmith is recitating the Anti-Federalist Papers. Everybody's heard about the Federalist Papers. Did you know there were Anti-Federalist Papers? Who listened to them? Nobody. And there was a whole bunch of them. Gordon Comstock, in any one of his manifestations, recitated some books. The latest that's going right now is Your Life is Their Toy, a book by Josephson, who looked at the corruption and the fakery in the medical industry. And this was written in 1941 with a second edition that came a couple of years later. But Josephson pointed out in 1941, and you know, that there's no money in healthy people. And now it is so bad because of Big Pharma getting into these doctors' heads. And that's another thing. If you actually get an MD, you're lucky, maybe. I mean, how in this country could the medical industry get worse? They're still trying to raise awareness for cancer. How about a damn cure? Oh, you know, no, it is. It's a virus, and it's being cured elsewhere. You know, you don't have to cut people's breasts off. You don't have to poison them. You don't have to zap them.
And now you come to me with this gothic horror story.
I mean, it's so anyway, there's another institution that's gotten corrupt. And they're not coming back. The best thing you can do is stay healthy physically, and what I'm trying to say is spiritually. I'm not trying to proselytize you. For those who have something inside of them that hearkens to what I've just said, it's not my words, it's scriptures, you'll understand. Most don't. Because most want to be with the majority, with the mob. And we'll continue to put things up for a time, and it'll be the last time, in the hopes that some people will find out for themselves what the deal really is. Because I hate to tell you folks that the cavalry ain't coming this time. Or the cavalry. Cavalry's coming, but not the cavalry. Not coming. Guys in the white hats ain't showing up. We're in this alone. But there's still a life to be lived. There's still enjoyment to be had in simple things. But in the meantime, myself and Eric and Gordon will bring you information, document it as best as we can, and you can find for yourself. That's it for this time, and hopefully there'll be a next time.